The following broadcast of Talk Shop was recorded for broadcast at this time. Good morning. Today is Friday, February the 23rd. Joining us this morning from Humboldt is Provost Jen Capps. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Oh, the sun will come up tomorrow.
Yeah. Living the dream.
Yeah. I'm just not really sure what dream it is.
Fair enough.
We're getting there.
Yeah.
You ready for your question?
Yeah.
All right. This is not macabre.
This is not macabre?
No, it's not.
Okay.
Why, when someone dies, do we say that they bought the farm?
Wow. I don't know.
Now, if you were from Davis or SLO.
Uh-huh, the ag
or,
connection.
Yeah, Pomona, you would be lambasted
okay.
by not knowing.
But, okay.
Okay. During the Second World War, airmen introduced the term, he bought the farm, after a pilot was shot down. The expression caught on with all armed services and meant that if you gave your life for your country, your impoverished family would receive insurance money for your death, which would help pay off the mortgage on the family farm.
Huh.
Death for your country meant that you were buying the farm.
Oh, man.
For your parents.
I should know that I really should know that because I had a relative in World War II that
bought the farm
and my grandfather. Was like a fighter pilot in World War II and bought the farm, and my grandmother got said thing. So I have been educated today.
You've been reminded.
I've been,
perhaps.
Okay, there you go. Yes, but that's absolutely what happened.
Yeah.
So that's interesting.
Huh.
Wow.
Something of reality that makes sense.
Right?
How cool.
Okay.
Show over.
All right. Mic drop, right,
yeah.
As they say.
We're going to have a lot of music the rest of the hour.
Okay, there you go. It's all downhill from there,
yeah.
Right? Okay.
I know this is going to sound really goofy, and you can certainly take it
sure.
for what it's worth. Is reality focused on campus? Something like that. I mean, it's real, it's tangible, it's what happened.
Uh-huh.
Instead of theory. And classroom. I mean, I know that's kind of the whole intent of Polytech is reality rather than theory.
Yeah.
Has it permeated through the campus and all the classrooms at this point?
That's a good question. I think it's both. I think it's theory and the hands-on experience and practical experience. So like 85-90% of our students have hands-on real-world experience. So they have to do an internship. They do real research. They publish a lot, which is really a unique thing at Humboldt. I've never been at an institution where undergraduate students were such prolific publishers. And we actually have an event.
So what is the definition of publish? Is that commenting on a blog site?
No.
Or
like,
is this writing, somebody actually paying to have it printed off on paper?
It's a magazine, it's a journal article, it's original research. Like it's real publication. It's pretty amazing.
Well, why would an undergrad do that? I mean, if I'm an accounting major,
mm-hmm.
The numbers add up. Signed, you know. I mean,
yeah. I mean, well, it's an opportunity to do, you know, to do real research and to do a research project and then publish on what your findings are. So perhaps they do an analysis of a business practice or connecting sort of a need in the community with a business practice. That's not my wheelhouse, so I'm not explaining well.
So
maybe you tell me.
It doesn't have to be massively huge breakthrough. When I think of research from an academic institute,
uh-huh.
We discovered a new star.
Yeah.
Okay,
could be that.
That's research.
Sure.
A new molecule.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I get that.
Right.
We discovered that driving one way down a two-way street is not wise.
Uh-huh.
Duh.
Okay.
I mean, you know,
right.
Research for me, it's like new body of information.
Yeah.
Rather than kind of recognizing what is and pointing it out.
Yeah. No, I mean, there's a lot of what you're talking about is original research, like things where you're discovering new things and that sort of thing. Yeah. I mean, there's definitely a lot of that and that aligns well with our polytechnic identity. There's also a lot of other stuff, too, that I do think adds value. There are a lot of people that that publish literary works and poems and different things.
Oh, that's cool.
I am not a poet. Let me just be the first one to say, but like it's incredible some of the things that our students and faculty and staff write.
English, that would make a ton of sense.
100% philosophy, yeah. Those types of things as well. But yeah, I mean, there's all sorts of things. And every year on Valentine's Day, there's an author celebration in the library and celebrate the different authors and do little tidbits of readings and things of people's work. But again, what's so prolific is the amount of undergraduate students that have done that. And so I think it builds confidence for them as they go into the workforce or if they go into grad school. If they go into grad school, that makes them super competitive to get into graduate school if they're already publishing work, writing, that sort of stuff. So,
yeah, that would make sense if you're the funnel is narrowing.
Yeah, and what I mean, one
you
of
need
the,
to stand out.
Yeah, okay. And I mean, one of the critiques a lot of the time is that this generation of students doesn't write very well for a variety of reasons. I mean, so you'll appreciate this.
Typing well, or are we talking about writing like with a pen and paper?
Just the quality of the content. So it doesn't even
written communication.
Right. But when you read something that somebody has written, whether they've typed it or written it out with a pen, like just the quality appears to have declined over time. And so there's a lot of critique about that, right?
For me, being as geeky as I am, going either to the Humboldt County room at the library or some of the old records, like turn of the century.
Mm-hmm.
The cursive writing. It's almost art.
Yeah.
Rather than, and even the guys that were barely literate and the gals that were barely literate still had the ability to write artistically.
Mm-hmm.
It's that separation from then to now in 120 years?
Yeah.
How badly it's gone downhill?
Yeah.
Chance for me to,
Well, yeah, and I mean, there's a lot of initiatives on campus, which I think is really cool, like called Writing Across the Curriculum. So trying to work on that and sort of elevate the quality of writing. And so rather than just adding more English classes, like how do you infuse more writing in all types of coursework to increase the quality of the writing?
Yeah, so, apply it.
Yeah,
to
exactly.
Wherever you are.
Yep, exactly.
So. Rather than avoid going to that class.
Right. Fair enough. Yeah.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:19.
Murphy's Markets has everything you need to get through your day the healthy way. From drinks to snacks and everything in between, right now, Amy and Brian Coconut Water is only $1.99. Brew Dr. Kombucha drinks are also just $1.99. And Annie's Homegrown products are $2.49. A 6-ounce Yoplait yogurt is only 79 cents. And don't forget about Chicken of the Sea tuna, 4 for $5. Get a boost for your day by stopping by Murphy's Markets, more than a grocer, your neighbor since 1971.
The following broadcast of Talk Shop was recorded for broadcast at this time. Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:24. We're back Talking Shop this morning with Jen Capps from Cal Poly Humboldt. The concept of working through language and writing skills and things of that nature, whether it's in a research paper or not, and I would think it should probably have a higher priority for research paper because, in theory, you want somebody to be able to read it and understand what's being said, right?
Absolutely.
Not 25 gazillion footnotes
referencing
all these other studies
that
you just cherry-picked. I mean, that's no fun.
Yeah, that's absolutely true.
When these students go through this process, is there somebody defending the regular guy? let's break these words down a little bit so that it's understandable, or the information that you've spent all this time either collecting or developing is usable.
Yeah.
Instead of going and using the language to the nth degree, and you may feel comfortable and your professor might,
right,
and nobody else can follow what it is that you're talking about.
Well, it's very interesting that you say that because there's ways that people write, especially scholars. Like if we not even talk about students for a moment, we talk about scholars who I feel like try to one up each other with big words a little bit, and then
supercalifragilistic.
Yeah, and it's funny to me because then some of the topics that we write about are things about trying to open up education and be accessible and inclusive, and by the very nature of being using these big words is exclusionary, and so they don't often get the hypocrisy in that.
It's almost like an hourglass.
It's an interesting thing, and sometimes I don't think they mean it that way, but that's one thing. Actually, our transition to Polytech and just something I care about a lot is making education accessible to the average person. So if we need to be speaking the same language so that people understand, and obviously one of the biggest critiques of higher ed is that people use big words. It doesn't make sense. It's not applicable to the real world, like all of those things. And we need to be able to talk about what the value of education is, right? And in ways in which people can understand and not the $100 words, right?
Well, that's in the situation here that I'm in, it's really easy for you to slip into jargon.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
Okay. Or yeah.
Yeah.
Here I am as a business person. Here I am as somebody,
mm-hmm.
and I can use the 10-syllable word instead of the 2-syllable. Collaborate is.
Yes.
Talk. Okay. Fine. Meet.
Mm-hmm.
Got it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's intriguing that it has gotten to that point where that's perceived as more knowledgeable.
Yeah.
And that's the end goal. Mm-hmm. Rather than communication,
mm-hmm.
is the primary goal.
Absolutely.
And how that's supported.
Mm-hmm.
And that inertia continues,
mm-hmm.
rather than stepping back and having a spouse or a kid or a friend or a classmate or a peer going, what do you mean?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So knowing your audience and being able to communicate in that in a way that's effective and meaningful to people is really important. And
how would a research paper that was done that didn't have a word that was longer than 2 syllables in the entire document be perceived?
Well, it depends. I think peers of a certain discipline, it depends. I think it depends on what the area of expertise is. And I think it depends on the audience, right? I think in some fields it would probably be perceived poorly, which is too bad. I think what is most important is being able to convey that information to the general public. It makes me think about things like COVID and like big health, just when big awful things happen in the world, or and then physicians or public health people try to communicate this complicated information to the public, and you're looking like what does that even mean, right? Those types of things. It's super important to be able to break down that information.
Well, I would think if you use, I'll call it regular guy words,
mm-hmm.
It's less apt to be misinterpreted,
mm-hmm.
because the functional definition is more well known.
Right.
So if you're trying to bamboozle someone,
mm-hmm.
yeah, use the 6-syllable word.
Yeah.
If your goal is communication of the information,
mm-hmm.
it'd be really easy to spot those that want to communicate versus those that want to feel as if they've done the job, but they don't want to become the everyman.
Yeah, I mean, I think the other side of the coin is the more simplistic that you communicate and the more simple words that you use, the less detailed or refined.
Or intellectual.
It's kind of like, so I'm a psychologist, right? So, yeah, I'm sorry. Sorry for you that we're having.
Break it out, baby.
But like, you could say, happy, sad, upset,
mad, scared.
Yeah, mad, sad, happy, sad, mad kind of thing, right? Those are like the basic ones, but isn't it sometimes more than that? I mean, if you're happy, are you...
Or combinations of the above.
Right, but if you're happy, are you content? Are you elated? Are you, right? And so that's when you get into those $5 words, right? Because that refines and becomes and zeroes in on even more descriptive, right? So I feel like when people who are experts in a field and they start talking to each other, they want to get more definitive and more descriptive. And so then they start to use those bigger words.
If that's the audience.
Right, exactly.
Cool.
Right.
But if your object is to communicate to the general population.
100%. And if you don't, then you need to stick with happy because that's what most people understand, right? And
We don't go to those levels.
Right, yeah, exactly. Being able to switch between those different audiences and communicate effectively is really important. And I do think that's what we're helping to train our students to be able to do.
Oh, I thought you were going to say facilitate.
Oh.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:30.
Something big.
Okay, it's a nice ride.
It's going to happen.
Stand by playback.
And now.
Live. Meet Radio.
I keep forgetting I'm president.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And these kids who come, they become Americans before a lot of Americans become Americans.
Now, here's your host, Lars Larson.
Hey there, it's Lars Larson. Join me for the Lars Larson Show, weeknights 10 to midnight. Honestly provocative talk radio on KINS.
The following broadcast of Talk Shop was recorded for broadcast at this time. KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Jen Capps from Cal Poly Humboldt. Circles.
Mm-hmm.
I would think that is one of the geometric.
Okay, you're breaking your rule right there.
One of the shapes.
Okay.
That someone doing a research paper, someone who is an academic, should blow up.
A circle?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because if that's the circle of your contacts,
okay,
and that's it, you become. It's not even a silo because there's not that many. It's just all of a sudden you start speaking and communicating and then projecting that's the norm.
True.
Instead of and that's I like going to some of the not necessarily the high price grocery stores.
Mm-hmm.
But the lesser ones, because those are folks I would not otherwise probably see much interaction with unless they cut me off on the road.
Mm-hmm.
And just to see and hear.
Yeah.
And understand, there are these various segments of our community. And if you only go to the certain types of stores or certain price point stores, you never get a true understanding of what we are. Well, same thing with this. That we've been talking about research and getting the word out and things of that nature. If you only speak to the Rotary clubs, pretty soon, and faculty organizations, you kind of think that's what it is, and maybe you expand a little bit into government.
Yeah.
Oh boy, that's Main Street, and you never, you don't see and talk to and get feedback from a regular guy and gal.
Yeah. I could say a lot about that. I mean, that is very true. I think when we really worked on our polytechnic designation, and I think I've said before on your show that I went and talked. I must have given 200 talks or met with 200 different groups, and I would say, I'd meet with three people in a little small coffee house and talk to them about what we're doing, or 1,000 people with Mike McGuire. Like, I literally, and everywhere in between, and it was all sorts of different kinds of people. And to me, that's what's really important. Surrounding myself by people that think and believe all the same things that I do is boring. And it's so uninspiring, and it's safe. And it's not going to change the world. It's not going to make our community better, in my opinion. And so I believe that our university has an obligation to figure out how to convene groups of people that have different perspectives and reach out and be open. So, and I'm gonna have to think about that. So not a circle, but be open to hearing other perspectives. And sometimes we don't like to do that. Like, we like to get safe in our little nests of, like, we'll hear all the people that agree with us, and how do we create spaces where we don't have active conflict? Like, you can disagree. You can disagree with one another about a topic, but how it can very quickly turn very vitriolly hateful. Which is unfortunate.
Yeah. I think I used Lou Quimby during the break. You know, we drive steaks.
It's tough.
And, you know, you can only probably have two or three of those in your life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Let alone something that's transitory.
Yeah.
Okay. Wrong word.
Oh, you're using bigger words than I am.
Something that comes and goes.
I love it. Well, it's funny coming to California, and I don't know if it's California, if it's CSU, if it's Humboldt, if it's a little bit of both, but it is an interesting dynamic where it feels like we are set up to, especially being an administrator, set up to be. Because I've more than once this week been called in a kind of a joking, lovingly way, but it wasn't last time, me being called air quote the man. Like, I'm the man because I'm the administrator. You know, I'm the one to be against. And I'm like, I don't understand that. We both either work at the institution, you go to school at the institution, we should have the same goals.
Yeah, I've never really grasped what the definition of that phrase is.
Yeah,
are
management.
You representing, is it management ownership? Is it status quo? Is it government?
Yeah.
Is it people that I don't like?
Well, yeah,
You know, what is this thing? It's kind of like saying corporate. Well, okay, there's a bunch of us that are under 10 employees that are incorporated.
Right. Yeah.
Well, no, that's not what I mean. Well, that's the word you used.
Yeah.
I mean, that kind of stuff, that's kind of gets back to me, either lazy language or ignorant language.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's foreign to me a little bit because my entire background and sort of how I live in the world is about trying to bring people together and compromise and sort of find common paths to work on things together, right?
It isn't the 96%.
It really is. Yeah. I mean, that's been in every type of work I've done, and that's where I've seen incredible success. And so it's interesting to come to a place, and there's a lot of reasons for it, I think. There's just in the way in which you know, the CSU system and union systems are set up, and it's long history of that. But it is interesting. And even before I came to California and I was shifted from a faculty role to administrator role, all of a sudden I was on the other side. I went to the dark side, everybody would say. And I was like, what? And then people forgot that I taught classes and I met with students and I did all those things. So it was like as if I had no idea. So I only say that because it's so important to me to be present on campus, to meet with students, to be out at events, to talk to people, to remind people that like I'm a human being like they are, and I care about the same things that they do, because it can get real lost really quickly and forget that, and then it really dehumanize administrators.
That's exactly what I was going to say. It really is that true. Yeah. It's tougher to hate a person.
Oh, sure.
Than a stereotype.
Oh, absolutely. And so
if you just happen to be the stereotype,
yeah.
Well, okay, so.
Right.
Don't get in my way.
Yeah.
So to speak.
And so I worry about, but also try to think about how to support our students who get caught up in some of that, and they'll
get sucked into.
Yeah,
arguments too.
Yeah, and they're young people, and they're trying to find their way, and they're testing things out, which is what you're supposed to do in college, right? That's what you're supposed to do when you're, in my mind, under 25, because of all the neat things we know about brain development, and that it used to be, you know, we thought it was all dialed by 16 or 17. It's more like 25.
25?
You bet it is. The brain development. Oh, you want me to use big words? I'll do that in the next
No, I wasn't 25. I was thinking closer to 35 or 40.
Oh, yeah. Well,
before, you've had enough battle scars and you lost enough teeth and you kind of understand what it is.
It's just what we know about the brain.
Oh, see, you're coming from a biological perspective.
Yeah. So.
I'm just coming from experience.
Okay, well, that's valid too.
KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:43.
Hearty and healthy foods are abundant at Murphy's Markets. USDA Choice boneless beef chuck roast is now $5.99 a pound. USDA Choice New York strip steak $15.99 a pound, and USDA Grade A boneless skinless chicken thighs are only $3.99 a pound. Complement this with a Greek salad now just $7.99 a pound, topped with Kraft salad dressing for only $3.75 for a 16-ounce bottle. Murphy's Markets, more than a grocer, your neighbor since 1971.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:46. We're back talking shop this morning with Jen Capps from Humboldt. This concept of talking it out, walking it out, I guess, is now kind of the cool little way to change that around a little bit. But having discussions where nobody dies, nobody bleeds.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, nobody, at the end, yeah, I guess the analogy is you have a beer.
Okay, yeah.
You know, for me, have a piece of pizza. And you part friendly. Maybe not friends, but friendly.
Right.
Do we need to teach classes on that kind of thing anymore? Because it doesn't seem, you know, without the nuclear family, without the extended family, without a lot of that communication that goes on and there's discussion and nobody dies, we seem to have lost that.
Yeah. It's interesting.
Madam Shrink.
Yeah, right. You cross sort of being a psychologist with being in higher education, and boom, you're off to the races on that conversation. Yeah, I mean, what I observe is an immediate move toward, conflict and arguing and protesting and those types of things, and there's nothing wrong with protesting, but what I was trying to understand, and you know, because that's kind of a normal thing that students in college do and adults do sometimes, and again, there's nothing wrong with it, but you know, when I think about what's the purpose of a protest, to blow off steam, to express frustration about something, but I think the root of it is, hey, I'd like to get to the table with who the decision makers are and express the things that I'd like to see and be able to express my ideas or what I'm upset about and see if we can't work it out, right? And sometimes I feel like that gets lost. It's
the goal?
Yeah, yeah, because I will say I make an intentional effort to approach students that are in those spaces and say, hey, let's talk it out. And it isn't often met with, oh, wow, yeah, thanks, let's do that. It's rather, oh, here's an opportunity to yell at you because, you know, I'm
representing the structure.
Yeah, exactly. And so, and that to me is more about, okay, this is where I go. People go in different places around that sort of response, but I go to a place of like, all right, how do we get at educating students? Because they think this is the way to get their point across and they're missing an opportunity.
Missing the opportunity to actually have impact.
Because I want to hear what you have to say. If you're upset about this thing, like, let's talk about it. Because you may have some really awesome suggestions. We might have messed up.
Yeah. Hey, you got a sec?
Yeah.
I mean, will they knock on the door and come up individually, or do they wait until there's this safety in numbers and then just rail rather than actually trying to accomplish something?
Well, I'll say from their side, so I'll put myself in their position too, because, you know, my position at the university is a high position. Like, I'm one of the highest positions at the university. And so,
yeah, but you got an office and it's easy enough to find.
It is,
so,
but
it's not like you're hiding.
Oh, no, I'm definitely not at all. And I, like I say, I intentionally go to spaces. My door's open. I encourage people to come by. And yet there is a little bit of a protective thing where sometimes folks are like, oh, you shouldn't be as accessible, or you have a really busy schedule, or that sort of thing. Well, and
why shouldn't you?
Right. Well, I don't ascribe to that.
Okay.
I'll say that I don't ascribe to that.
But that's
my door is open.
The inertia of the structure that has been traditional.
Yes. So I'll say when I came 4 years ago, it was very funny because it wasn't even okay to email the provost directly, and I said, well, why not? And they're like, well, no, you're okay to get an email from a student or a faculty.
You're a protected species?
I said, I am. I said, please. I said, I'll meet with anybody at least once.
Go get a hamburger down at, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, yeah, so that's what
I did.
Notice
that's another food reference.
Okay, yeah. Two food references, yeah. But yeah, I mean, I am willing to meet with anybody at least once. And there might be reasons to meet with people lots and lots of times, but and I did that for a long time. And there is obviously a bandwidth issue. I mean, in my role, there's a lot of obligations of meetings and presentations and leading discussions and travel and all these things that there aren't enough hours in the day to just kind of have an open office and say, come one, come all. So there are times where I have to be a little bit more structured about it.
Well,
but
an appointment isn't a bad thing.
No, but people, it blew people away when I was like, okay, sure, you want to meet? What?
Oh.
You'll meet with us? Sure. Oh. Okay, sure. Anyway, and
bluff called.
Well.
Sometimes.
So bluff called sometimes, but yeah. But the other side of it is, I think when people had tried to do that in the past, they were told no, and so they didn't think that was an okay thing to do, and so trying to deconstruct that.
But the student
that, yeah.
body turnover is such.
Yeah.
Now, nobody knows anybody else in that chair.
True, though employees, faculty and some employees have been there a long time. So they
sure.
have experienced that. And perhaps you maybe communicate to students. And again, not
so you have faculty coming, knocking on the door as well as
sure,
students.
Yeah.
Okay.
And which I like. It has yeah. really, it's a neat thing to have been here, you know, in my fourth year, almost completing my fourth year. And really feeling the depth, starting to feel those depth of those relationships and us being able to accomplish things where it's feeling much less like the, you know, us and them, but rather we're working together. And a lot of it is taking their feedback, being able to hear their feedback. And we've been here a long time and this is what we think would work and incorporating that. And then hearing back from them, hey, thanks. And like, let's keep moving. Let's keep working
together. Kind of
like
shock and awe.
It's a cool thing. So we're in a good groove on that. But with respect to students and just really trying to figure out how to get their point across. And, you know, my whole goal is to help them when they leave. Well, when they're on campus to have a good experience, but also to equip them with the tools to be successful. And that's our goal. So we
part of that is just
it.
Talking
yeah.
to people.
Totally. Yep. You know, you got it.
Maybe risk by yourself.
Yeah.
You know, you can always hide behind a chocolate milkshake.
Yeah. Hey.
That's three.
There you go.
I think we're done.
Perfect. Love it.
Enjoy your weekend.
You too.
See everybody on Monday. This presentation of Talk Shop was recorded at a previous time for playback today.